Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Michael Shackelford. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's in the Video Poker Hall of Fame, and he has written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the Video Poker for Winners computer software. Michael Shackelford is the force behind the websites Wizard of Odds, Wizard of Vegas, and Wizard of Macau. An actuary by profession, Michael has been analyzing the whole gamut of casino games since 1995. His Wizard of Odds website explains the best strategies for 140 different casino games. Michael is also the author of Gambling 102, The Best Strategies for All Casino Games, and is a former adjunct professor of gaming math at UNLV. The goal of the show is that, by listening, you will be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Mike.
Good evening. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
I'm Mike Shackelford.
Tonight, our guest is Roger Snow, Executive Vice President, Corporate Product Group Chairman, a Shuffle Master. Basically, he's in charge of bringing new table games to market, and we'll be talking to him about how that process worked. In an email sent to gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com, a listener asked about a promotion at John Esquaga's Nugget up in Sparks, Nevada. There is an electronic game contest where qualified guests have a chance to win several prizes, but something like 80 times in a row, this particular guest has always won the lowest price. He wants to know if this is legal in Nevada. Michael, what do you know about this one?
Now, I believe that this person also said that after it was revealed that he won the lowest prize, higher prizes were apparent that he didn't pick, kind of like a slot machine bonus.
Uh-huh.
And this sounds awfully fishy to me. The way slot machine bonuses work are, let's say that it's like reel 'em in and you pick one fisherman out of five and it reveals a prize. Those fishermen, those prizes don't necessarily have to be equally weighted. The bigger prizes can have a lower weighting than the smaller ones, but if they reveal what was behind the things you didn't pick, then it must be fair and everything has to have an equal chance. And by the way, I asked Stacy Friedman, who is another gaming mathematician and who runs the site Olympian Gaming, for confirmation on that, and he indeed said what I just said, so I wanted to give him due credit. So anyway, this event sounded like a kind of like a slot machine bonus, and if they were revealing to him, oh, sorry, look, you missed the $1 million prize, it was, you should have picked that, that would indeed be fishy, and I think worthy of complaining to gaming about.
Interesting. I have a totally opposite take on it. At the Gold Coast, they have, for years, these weekly events where you play 10 points and you qualify, and it varies. You can tip a cow, you can pick a bottle, you can do something with a boat, but every time you have a choice between 5 or 6 or 7. And after it's over, you get, they tell you what the amounts are. Now, I usually get in the $10 to $15 range. And I have seen players ahead of me typically get between the $3 and $5 range. So I'm assuming it's basically how big of a player you are at that particular casino. Now, they do always have like a $250 or $500 prize, and I've never gotten it. And so I usually get within a pretty narrow range. One player did post on VP Free that one time he did get the $500 prize, and he cashed it right away in case they decided to make up his mind. But players who play there a lot know what they're going to get, basically. So I don't think it has to be equally weighted. Or if so, Gold Coast is in significant violation.
Now, can you tell me in more detail how the promotion is played at the Gold Coast?
Yeah, you play 10 points.
Uh-huh.
and you go to the kiosk, swipe your card, put in your PIN number, and let's say it's Tip a Cow. And then you will see six cows on the screen, and you touch one of them. And then it will say the $10 prize actually reads 10,000 points, because that's the conversion. And so you see, you got 10,000 points, and then you'll see all the others. There might be one for 5,000, might be one for 50,000, might be one for 250,000, but you got the one that was 10,000.
Now, I'm not saying that's breaking any gaming regulation, but I don't approve of it, and I would complain about it if I did it.
Okay. I'll next time I... okay, well, it's... they've been doing it for years, so I...
And, yeah, I just may have to do the 10 points and do it myself sometime.
All right, good. All right, good. Now, the Palms has a new sports book. They had an old one, and then they shut it down for a couple months and reopened it up. It's all nice and snazzy, and it's run by Cantor Gaming, who has sports book outlets all over town. It's the screens are noticeably brighter and higher quality than the ones in the old book. Overall, I was disappointed in this. It's a slightly bigger area, but it shares its space with the poker room, meaning that the space on for the Race and Sports book is quite a bit smaller and harder to get to. To get to the sports book, you have to walk by the poker room and through the race book. Now, I don't have any figures to know whether their sports book is busier than the race or not. I assumed it was, but you would think you'd make the one that was had the most business the easiest to get to. But, Mike, have you checked this one out yet?
I have not, so I'm afraid I don't have much to add on that topic.
All right, so you will sooner or later, because you have been known to make sportsbook bets every now and then. So let us know what you think when you think it.
I promise.
All right. Now, this Sunday, there's an annular eclipse that's coming close to Vegas. Well, it's zillions of miles away, but you can see it close to Vegas. So, Michael, why don't you give us a science lesson? Tell us what an annular eclipse is, and are you going to go anywhere to see it?
I'd be happy to. An annular eclipse is when the moon and the earth and the sun are in perfect alignment, but the moon follows an elliptical orbit around the earth, and because of this, sometimes it appears bigger and sometimes it appears smaller in the sky. And coincidentally, the area that you see that the sun and the moon take up in the sky is just about the same. But when the moon is in a part of its orbit that's far away from the sun, it will appear smaller. And when it's close, it appears bigger. When it's close in its orbit to the earth and the three things are in alignment, then you will have a total eclipse, which is fantastic, and everyone should try to see one at some time in their life. And there's going to be one in the United States in 2017. An annular eclipse is not as good. That's what I might call a donut eclipse, whereas if you're in a certain range of the eclipse path, the sun will appear like a very bright ring
of
in
fire.
The sky. And in Las Vegas on this Sunday, the sun will be about 90% covered, but it's not going to be a ring. If you were to go up to, I believe, Mesquite, it would appear like that, but a good place to view it for as long as possible would be a little bit north of St. George. And so I'm hoping to make a Zion trip / eclipse this Sunday to see it.
All right, and this is going to happen during the day because the sun has to be out when it's on. So.
Yes, it's going to be, I should know, but it's going to be late in the day, roughly 5 or 6 o'clock, I think.
All right, and so you shouldn't look directly at the sun. You should look at it the shadow on the ground or use big sunglasses. Using binoculars doubles your chances for eye injury.
Yes, what I did was I went to Lowe's and I bought those glass panels that you put in welder's masks. And I saw that looking through two of those, you could view the sun quite safely. One was too little, and three, you couldn't see anything at all. So two is just the right number. And these pieces of glass are pretty cheap. They're only like $5 each. I recommend buying two of them.
All right. So, Michael, why don't you tell us who Roger Snow is and how come he's sitting over there?
Okay. Our guest, Roger Snow, is no stranger to radio. From 1990 to 97, he worked as a radio and television news reporter. In 97, he moved to Las Vegas and began work for Shufflemaster in 2000. Today, Roger is an executive vice president at Shufflemaster. The area where I keep crossing paths with Roger is in the area of product development, specifically new table games. Some of Roger's biggest successes are Ultimate Texas Hold'em, Crazy Four Poker, Four Card Poker, and the Baccarat Dragon Bonus, which I wrote the official math report on. On May 2nd, Roger hosted a new game focus group for 15 new table games. Many of my forum members came to Las Vegas for the event to see how their own game would fare. It was so successful that Roger is hosting another focus group in June. Here to tell us more about playing the so-called carnival games is Roger Snow. Roger, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks, Bob. Glad to be here.
Okay, question one. It seems to me that Caribbean Stud, Let It Ride, and three-card poker touched off the carnival game craze. Measured as a percentage of the table game floor space, do you think that carnival games are still replacing the classic games, or do you think the market has reached a saturation point?
Well, the trend has really continued from that original point when Caribbean Stud started it off. I used to do a discussion every year at the gaming show, the one here in Las Vegas, and I would talk about the continued prominence of carnival games in the marketplace. And this, every year you just see the trend go up and up and up. But what's interesting about it is it's not preordained to be that way. It happens when new games, great new games, enter the marketplace. And that's when you'll see an acceleration of that trend. A game like Three Card Poker or a game like Blackjack Switch or a game like Let It Ride will come out and really drive the ascent of new table games.
In carnival games, frequently the game itself is 2 or 3% house advantage, and they often have a side bet of 8, 9, 10%, something like that. Now, for an advantage player to consider this, usually what happens is the dealer is doing something wrong. The dealer is flashing a hold card. The dealer gets confused on the rules. Something like that. So what does Shufflemaster do to clear this up from the casino's point of view?
Yeah, it's a concern for us because over time the games have become more and more complex. A game like Ultimate Texas Hold'em can be confusing for a dealer to administer, and mistakes happen. Now, what we do to mitigate the possibility of that is, of course, we have trainers who go out in advance and spend as much time as needed with the casinos to make sure the dealers and the floor and the pit bosses and surveillance are all up to speed on how the game is played. Now, that does not eliminate mistakes. They will happen. And again, it's the old saying, there are two kinds of mistakes, but there are mistakes that go in the player's favor and mistakes that go in the house's favor. But the only ones that the players bring up are the ones that go in the house's favor.
Exactly.
Right. So there really are, even though there are two kinds of mistakes, only one kind gets reported.
Yep. One question I get a lot from game inventors is what market to cast their net in. Vegas is certainly ground zero for the business. I like to say that if a game can make it in Vegas, it can make it anywhere. However, it may be easier to get a placement in the Podunk Nugget Bowling Alley and Casino. So what is your advice for Joe Game Inventor about what part of the country or what part of the world should he try to market his game in?
You know, I think I've been to the Podunk Nugget. It's a nice place. Shuffle Master really doesn't launch many games in the state of Nevada, and that's because there are some regulatory hurdles that must be cleared. So for the most part, we launch our games in California, tribal casinos, where they're really, besides getting approval from the tribe, there is no other regulatory hurdle. So California or the state of Washington, those are the two states that we tend to launch our games in. I can probably count on one hand the number of games that we've launched in Nevada.
If I've invented a game on my dining room table, and my mother tells me it is really great, and I bring it to you, I haven't taken it to anybody else, what are the chances that my game's going to be successful? How close to zero are you going to say?
Pretty close. Now, in all due respect to Mom, I tell people I ain't your mom, and I'll tell them the truth. The odds of a new game being successful, again, it depends on how you define success, but I think it's probably 1 in 500, maybe 1 in 1,000. If you think of all the games that have been developed and marketed since Caribbean Stud kicked this whole crazy business off 25 years ago, right now there are probably only 15 games that are successful. That's less than one a year. And there's a lot of guys doing it.
There's more than 15 carnival games out there. So success means, in your mind, $250,000 a year, something like that?
Again, thanks for mentioning that. When I say success, in my mind, I think of a game that makes about at least $500,000 a year or more in revenue for the owner of the game. That's how I define success.
And I've been doing math for Game Inventors for 15 years, and I've done hundreds of them, and the only game that I think that has been successful in this country is Shuffle Master's own Dragon Bonus, and most of the rest, probably 90%, never saw the inside of a casino, and the other 9% did terribly. So I agree 100% with what you're saying. But you mentioned Washington. Now, that is a weird state when it comes to gambling. I've been in some of the, like the bowling alley casinos there that usually will have just about 6 to 10 games, and they never just have a standard blackjack or craps game or roulette. It's always some carnival game, and it's often the off-the-wall stuff. So what is going on with there? Is it that people in Washington just are different than the rest of the country, or is the business somehow fundamentally different there due to some laws?
They eat more apples, Michael.
And they eat the cores, too. It's a different market. The regulatory environment in Washington is very strict, and with the exception of the half dozen or so tribal casinos, which are allowed to have table games, unlimited table games, and slot machines, these mini casinos have regs, and they cannot have more than, I think it's 15 tables, no slot machines. So it's hard to make a profit off of a straight blackjack game when it holds 12, 15%. So what tends to happen in that state is a lot of carnival games. If a casino had 12 tables, I would say 10 of them would be carnival games. So it's a great market for Shuffle Master. Besides Nevada, it is our number one market for carnival games. But it's a very dog-eat-dog market. A lot of games go in there because the appetite for them is so strong. So you tend to fight it out. But it's one of my favorite markets to test a game in. If it does well there, it'll probably do well everywhere.
I was once shown, many times I was shown a video poker game, and before the guy showed it to me, he wanted me to sign a non-disclosure agreement, an NDA, saying basically I wasn't going to take his idea and steal it and make $1 million off of it. Now, I did not sign the NDA simply because I view that as a invitation to a lawsuit. And these are prepared. He pulled it out of his briefcase, and his lawyer made it up. And there could have been anything in there. I'm not a lawyer. And so I'm concerned that a little part of his game might have been similar to something I saw 2 years ago. And then there's a lawsuit. So does Shuffle Master use non-disclosure agreements? And what is your general feeling about them?
We do not. And case in point would be the focus group we did a couple of weeks ago with some of Mike's forum members and the one that's coming up in a couple of weeks. We have them sign a waiver. It is not an NDA, a non-disclosure agreement. It is, you're essentially the person who signs that, and they're doing it of their own free will, and it's a prerequisite for coming in the door.
That doesn't sound quite like own free will if it's a prerequisite.
Well, they could not sign it, and they could not show up. But you must sign the waiver. And basically, the waiver says, and I think this might be in the fine print, if I pull out a gun and aim it at your chest and pull the trigger and then desecrate your remains, we're not liable. This is a ironclad waiver. No matter what happens while you're there, we are not at fault.
That part might be challengeable. But all right, but you'd be dead, so you won't worry about it. All right, good. So you don't use NDAs. I agree with that.
So another question I get from game inventors a lot is, I haven't even invented a game yet, but I want to jump into the market. What kind of angle should I go for? Should I go for a poker game, a blackjack-based game, or something completely off the wall? What would be your advice?
Yeah, and again, this is my favorite topic in the world to talk about. So I'll give people, and I like to give some advice. I've been doing this for about 11 years, and I think I've probably learned something. If only by osmosis, I've learned something over the years. And I tell people this, it depends on what your goal is. If you want to be able to strut around as the most clever guy on the block, then go create a game with dice football or dice baseball or dice hockey or whatever. But if you want to make money, see, I'm only in this for the money. I have no other motivation. It's not about self-esteem. It's not about creativity. I'm trying to make money from my employer so they keep paying me. So if you want to do games that'll make money, I tell people to stick to the following: poker games, blackjack games, and side bets. And people say, well, I'm more creative than that. And I come back and say, Shakespeare wrote more than 100 sonnets. They all have the exact same structure. You're saying he wasn't creative? The confines of structure are what allow for creativity. If you have no confines, it's anarchy. You want to have a poker game. You want to have a blackjack game. You want to have a side bet. If you look at those top 15 games, they're all one of those. Every single one of them is a poker game, a blackjack derivative, or a side bet. So why would you want to go out of your way and try to create something that doesn't exist? If your goal is to make money, if your goal is to be the most clever guy on the block, then go ahead. But I tell people over and over and over again, people like poker, they like blackjack, and they like side bets.
So I guess that explains why Shuffle Master is not doing that dice football and the dice backgammon game that we saw at O'Shea's earlier.
Well, now that guy's going to be coming after me now. I didn't mean to say that.
But a side bet on craps, for example?
Absolutely. We just spent a lot of money buying the fire bet, okay. The side bet. Absolutely. A side bet for...
On an existing game?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Absolutely.
Now, Michael mentioned that he... on an earlier show, that he submitted a game at your forum group a couple of years ago, and it did well, and I want to make sure we have time to talk about that. So what was Michael's game all about, and how well do you think it's going to do?
A couple of years ago?
No, a couple of weeks ago.
A couple of weeks ago.
He had a mulligan.
Yeah, three-card mulligan. He actually showed it to me over at Aria, at one of the restaurants over there, and, you know, I'm candid to a fault. I was not raised properly, so I tend to tell people exactly what I'm thinking without regard for their feelings. And I was sort of bracing myself to give Mike the letdown speech, but...
Because 99 point something.
Exactly. And even someone of Michael's reputation, it's unlikely that he would come up with something that would really capture my attention. But it was fantastic. It was one of the best ideas that I've seen in a long time. And the best thing about it is, Mike can attest to this, I probably stared at it for 90 seconds because I'm like a magician. I don't want to know how the trick is performed. I want to figure it out. I couldn't figure out how he extracted a house advantage, which is great. It took me 90 seconds before it finally dawned on me what he had done. That's how clever it was.
And you're a professional at this, so most players won't be able to figure it out.
Correct. And judging from the people I spoke to at the last focus group, they don't know where it comes from. And even afterwards, I took the Shuffle Master guys out to lunch, and we were talking about it, and they didn't know where it came from. And that's key. If you can bury the house edge, that's a wonderful attribute in a new game.
So the player thinks he's playing an even game, and the house knows he's not.
Exactly.
All right.
And that's almost impossible to do in a head-to-head game against the dealer. In a pay table game like Let It Ride or Mississippi Stud, you just short pay.
Yeah, eight instead of nine,
exactly,
or something.
Like video poker. But when you have a head-to-head game, you need to create a mechanic that gives the dealer an advantage. And the one that Mike came up with is among the best that I've seen.
So will we be seeing it out there? Will Shuffle, do we have it? Can we?
Well, I'm in the middle of negotiations. You're not making my job any easier. Well, now he's going to ask for more money.
I'm on his side.
Exactly.
So I want 10%, but, Michael, by the way.
But as I recall, he didn't sign an NDA, so.
All right. So it sounds like it's time to move on to another question, Michael. Your turn.
Well, thanks for all the kind words about my game. So as mentioned, Shuffle Master did a focus group at Shuffle Master headquarters on May 2nd, and they invited anyone to come to bring their game and to have it evaluated by a panel of dealers, and all the results were tallied up and right there after the event to see how they did. And Roger was very candid about his remarks. And afterward, there was a great deal of chatter about the event on my forum. And some people had things that were not very nice to say. I thought you did a huge service to Game Inventors.
Well, he liked your game. That might have affected your opinion.
Yes. Maybe. I would like to think that it doesn't. Anyway, I would like to give you the chance to get anything off your chest about the event, because I know that you've been taking it, so this is your chance to give it.
Well, I have to restrain myself a little bit, and I was upset at the time afterwards, because I felt what I was doing was altruistic in a sense. I was reaching out to people who did not have the opportunity to show their games in this type of forum. They could not on their own assemble the people that I assembled to evaluate the games. And you had the Shuffle Master executives there. You had my boss, the CEO of Shuffle Master. He was there. You had the entire table games team. It really was a table games version of American Idol. We were there to find games that we could take on. And we opened it up for everybody. And, you know, afterwards, I was a little disappointed in some of the wild conspiracy theories that were flying around on your message boards. But like my mom once said, no good deed goes unpunished.
Was it your mom who invented that expression?
She coined that, yes.
Oh, I always wondered who did that.
So
I've heard that.
I was a bit disappointed because my intentions were good. I told somebody afterwards, I should just stick to evil because I'm not good at being good, obviously. I try to be nice, I try to be good, and it blows up in my face. But from a Shuffle Master's very selfish perspective, it was successful because we found some games that internally that we developed that we think look pretty good. We, of course, did a deal for Michael's game. And there's one other game that we're looking at, and we may do a deal for. We're checking into the patentability of it. So if I have to take a bit of a public shellacking on the message board, if it helps my company become more successful in the future, then that's fine. Whack away.
Well, it sounds like you didn't learn from your mistake and that you're going to do another forum group in a couple more weeks. So If some of our listeners have a game and they're interested in participating, what are prerequisites to participate, and how do they get a hold of you?
Well, this forum, this focus group is closed off right now. We have 6 games, and that's it. I'm sure we'll do another one in a few months, and I'll post it on Mike's message board. But the format will be different this time. I will not be showing any of my games at this event, in large part because I don't have any more right now. But we're doing this specifically for folks from the outside, and we will see how those games do without other Shuffle Master games being there as well.
Yeah, with Shuffle Master games being there as well, you would think that would make the competition tougher, because it would be harder to shine against professionally created games, I would think.
We'll see. Again, I don't subscribe to that. I think if a game is good, it doesn't matter who came up with it. And that's the great thing about this business. And it's different than anything else in the casino industry. You can't create your own slot machine. You can't create your own shuffler. Trust me, you can't. That's not allowed. I work for Shuffle Master. But you can create your own game. You just need a deck of cards, a colored cloth, and a unique idea. That's all it takes. And the history book is full of guys. Derek Webb, Jeff Hall. They've gone out there from nothing and have carved out extremely successful careers as game developers. It can be done.
Yeah, so speaking of the old classic games, one idea I keep seeing newcomers to the business trying is mixing two popular games together. And I see blackjack and baccarat a lot, and I see blackjack and poker merged together a lot. And it seems to me that these games never do well on the marketplace. Have you ever seen these types of games, or is it just me? And what's your opinion about the idea?
Let me tell you what I tell these people. I say this. I love beef stew. I love a nice, big, heaping, steaming bowl of beef stew. And I like chocolate ice cream. But I don't like my chocolate ice cream on top of my beef stew. Just leave these games alone. These combo games, it's an idea that should have died a long time ago, but it keeps being resuscitated. Let it die with some dignity. It doesn't work.
Interesting. That's the opposite of what one of our sponsors is videopoker.com, and they're combining their games all the time. You'll see Super Times Pay and Multi-Strike added together, or and all of their games they make work in the triple play format and stuff. So apparently it works in the table game version, or in the slot machine version, but not in the table game.
And that's not the only case of that. For example, in slots, branding works very well. The branding of a slot machine. In table games, it really hasn't. The biggest branded success was World Series of Poker, which was the game from PGIC, Texas Hold'em Bonus. That's a generic name. And when we bought that game in 2007, we told the casinos that you have to pay extra for this World Series of Poker brand. And most of them said, I'll just go back to Texas Hold'em Bonus, the generic name. So in table games, branded games really haven't worked. What's the other one there? World Poker Tour. That brand really hasn't made a difference. In slots, though, it's all about the brand.
You mentioned Jeff Hall in passing 3 minutes ago. Now, it happens that he's going to be our guest next week on the air. So most of our listeners have never heard the name Jeff Hall, I assume. So what do you think of Jeff Hall? What has he done, and how does that react with Shuffle Master?
Jeff's the greatest. I mean, Jeff is a wonderful guy, a terrific and prolific game inventor, and so I'm a poker guy. I do mostly poker games. I had a couple of successes in baccarat and in blackjack, but mainly I'm a poker guy. So I tell Jeff, stay with blackjack. Don't mess around in my sandbox. Jeff's a brilliant guy. He's got Blackjack Switch. That's his most well-known game, but he's got this whole arsenal of blackjack derivatives: Blackjack Switch, Free Bet Blackjack, Power Blackjack, Never Bust Blackjack, Burn 20. He is just brilliant when it comes to creating blackjack derivatives. And he's a good guy, too. He's just the nicest guy you'll ever meet. And it is funny, though, because he and I once were sort of comparing notes on how we go about developing games, and it's completely different. He'll call me. He lives in England. He'll call me, and it'll be like 9 o'clock at night. And look, it's Jeff Hall. Jeff, isn't it like 3 in the morning? I got this idea. I got to find this idea. His mind works. It's like these ideas invade his brain, and he has to get them down and talk to somebody about them. I work there. I have to go segregate time from my day to go sit down and create a game. For him, it's just all-consuming.
And I assume with his track record that you're going to take that call at whatever time of day it is.
Damn right. He gets the bat phone.
He gets the bat phone.
All right. So when I went to a gaming show in Australia some years ago, I saw a Shuffle Master booth there. And so I take it that Shuffle Master has some interest in Australia. My question is, other than the United States, where is Shuffle Master casting its net, and what do you think are other money-making markets for carnival games?
We have our carnival games. You know, it's funny. That word carnival is derisive, but I can't stop saying it. But we have carnival games in 30 countries around the world. Now, most of them are in the United States, followed by probably Canada. But we have games in, I mean, like I said, 30 countries. So all the major markets, like Singapore, Macau, we have them all over Europe. We have them in Cambodia, I mean, Korea. But the biggest market, of course, is the U.S., then probably Canada. Australia is becoming big. We've added in the past year in Australia about 50 new games, which is not 50 different titles, but 50 units of game, which is pretty significant. So, and then a market that's opening up for us very soon is France. And our folks over in Europe think that France will become a big table games market, Germany as well. So there are horizons outside of the U.S.
Very good. Roger, we're running out of time, and we want to thank you. And now if somebody has this game and they want to get a hold of you, should they contact you, or should they contact one of your underlings? And whichever the answer is, how do they do that?
The best way to, and call me, it's or not call, but contact me, and I can give out my email address, right?
Yes, okay. Please.
The email address is rsnow@shufflemaster.com. But do not divulge your idea in the email. Just tell me that you have an idea that you want to discuss with me, and I'll help shepherd you through the process. But do not blurt out your idea in that email. And people do that. Just tell me you have an idea, and I can either call you and walk you through the process. It's an easy process to walk through. It's on our website, and we actually have a little drop-down menu for game inventors.
Shufflemaster.com.
Shufflemaster.com, yes. And again, these are like bomb scares or blind dates. I take them all seriously until proven otherwise. I'd love for somebody to come off the street and have a great idea, and love to make that person rich.
And so far, it's happened how many times in your 12 years?
Zero.
But
I'm still, Mike, help me out here. The law of probability says eventually it'll happen.
And Mike might be that one.
Yeah, you're overdue. Fortunately, when it comes to my game, is up to bat.
All right, good. Thank you very much, Roger. We very much appreciate you being here. It was very informative.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, thanks, Roger.
So, Michael, what did we learn tonight?
Wow, that was a very enjoyable interview. I've known Roger for years, and you know, in the same kind of business, we've crossed paths a lot. So
you didn't learn a damn thing.
Yeah, basically, no. But I really enjoyed the interview, and I'm going over in my head the stuff about Washington State that I didn't know about the regulatory environment and. That they like to try out games there. That was new to me.
I was actually glad that a major company is agreeing with me on non-disclosure agreements. I did not think it was to my interest to sign that, and They either trust you or you don't. I periodically get invited by videopoker.com to look at a new game that they want my opinion on it without disclosing, and I have to promise not to disclose anything about it until whenever the date is, frequently the upcoming gaming show when it's out there, and then they want the people to talk about it. And they've known me long enough that they trust me. And but anyway, I was glad that a major company agrees with that.
Yeah, I don't like them either. And one annoyance I have is people write to me all the time and say, Mike, I'd like your honest assessment of this casino game idea that I thought of. And being the nice guy that I am, I'll usually say, yes, tell me the gist of the idea. And then they'll say, I demand that you sign a non-disclosure first. And my reaction is always, you know, you're asking me for my time for free and my expertise, and now you want me to put myself in legal jeopardy signing this NDA. No, thank you. My original offer is now off the table.
Interesting. All right. So what's happening at the Wizard websites?
Okay. At the Wizard of Macau, I just added a review of the Grand Waldo on the Wizard of Odds. I've added a page on a game called 7-Up Baccarat, which is a game found at the Marina Bay Sands in Singapore. This is a Baccarat game where the player, as in the bet, the first card is always a 7, which works to the player's advantage a little bit. So they change the odds on winning hands. So I have an analysis of that game, and I also put up an analysis of a game that I saw. Where did I see this game? At the Golden Nugget, called 3-Card Hold'em.
Very good. All righty. The South Point has more than 10,000 video poker games, returning more than 99%. That's more than anybody else. All throughout May, they're having a Chevy a Day promotion, where they're giving away your choice of one of three $25,000 Chevrolets every day. The drawing's at 8:20 each night, and you have 24 hours to claim it. Four additional players earn $250 in Chevron gas card. And if you claim the Chevy within 10 minutes, you get a bonus package that's worth about $5,000. I've been entering for both Shirley and me every day. I think it's a positive EV play. But so far, I haven't earned anything yet this year. I will continue to do it through the end of the month. Double Point Day at South Point is Memorial Day, Monday, May 28th, from midnight to midnight. At the Palms, the Play, Earn, and Win promotion, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, for the rest of the month, is going to be about movies. You can earn a popcorn maker, a 15-inch TV, movie tickets, DVDs, and the like. You keep your points. For 11 days in a row, starting tomorrow, Friday, the Palms offer a Capture the Alien nightly drawings at 7 p.m. based on your play from 7:46 p.m. the previous night. So for those of you listening live, the first hour of earning possibilities for this promotion, you've already blown. So after the drawing, they throw away all the virtual entries and they start earning tickets for tomorrow night. They're doing this 11 days in a row from Friday the 18th through Monday the 28th. Now, in this game, the first five winners get $500 apiece, and the next five winners get $250, and each of them get a bonus game piece, and then there's a game where each of the players have an equal chance, and two of the players get tickets to the finals. So the finals, there'll be up to 22 people if everybody shows up, and they're going to be trying for a $10,000 plus home entertainment center, which you can settle for $8,400 in cash if you want. Now, the play on Monday, Wednesday, and Fridays during this promotion earns you the play, earn, and win stuff. And the play on the other days of the week doesn't. So presumably it's going there's more people going to be playing this promotion on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday because of this, because the double up the promotion possibility. So you have to decide for yourself whether the lesser chances on the Monday, Wednesday, and Friday is made up for by the gift that you give. Now, I don't have an exact answer of which is better or not, but I can tell you that this is the kind of thing that intelligent gamblers think about as to which way gives you the biggest edge. And a large part about gambling with an edge is learning how to think about the gambling. So that was that. All right, Michael. One of the earliest shows, when you started in February, you told us you were applying for a concealed weapon permit. Now, off the air, you told me that that permit has just come through after many months. So tell us about that. But before you do, I'm still very concerned about whether you're packing today and whether I've said anything recently to offend you.
Indeed, I finally did get my permit. Let me show it to you.
Oh, well, good. I'm holding it up. If any of you have color radio, you can see that it is a color picture of Michael Shackelford that I recommend that he lose and get a different picture. This doesn't look very good.
I thought this was a pretty good picture of me.
All right. So,
yes, I finally got it in the mail. It took the police department about 3 months to approve my application. So now I am indeed legal to carry a concealed weapon as long as it's not in a prohibited place like a school or some place that posts a sign saying no concealed weapons. But I'm not invoking that right now. In fact, to be perfectly honest with you, I'm not even sure how I'm going to hide a weapon, and I need to go to the gun store to see what they have. I hadn't thought that far ahead. So, up until now, I did it mostly on Second Amendment right reasons, and so now that I actually have the right to do it, I haven't done it yet.
Uh-huh. So if you carried a gun in a holster on your belt, you wouldn't need that permit?
No, you can't do that even with or without a permit, because then it's not concealed, and society doesn't like people walking around like they're cowboys with a revolver at the ready.
That would make me uncomfortable.
Yeah, yes. it scares people. So it is supposed to be concealed to not startle people. And if you did have a holster outside your pants, then you would need a very big shirt or a jacket to cover it up. Another idea is to use the holster like that James Bond liked, where you kept it under your shirt to the side. And with the small guns, some people put them on their leg. And, you know, they talked about this in the class about all the various ways you can do it. And the teacher said that, you know, there's really not one best way. It comes down to comfort and what you like.
Well, I was always a fan of the old Maxwell Smart's Get Smart TV series. That might be a couple of years too old for you, Michael.
No, I love that show.
And they would have weapons and stuff in all kinds of in a shoe, or
the
telephone.
Yes. Yes, and that predated cell phones by years.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, no, I watched Get Smart religiously.
I actually knew Don Adams. He played backgammon at the same club that I did in the Los Angeles area.
So what was his personality like in real life?
Well, one of the things I really liked was you playing backgammon with him. And when you see him enough, he's no longer a celebrity. He's just another guy at the... And so there was one time that I was playing him. He was ahead, and the only number that would really get me out of the particular predicament I was in was double fours. And so I shook the dice and actually happened to roll double fours. It was a 1 out of 36 chance, but it came true this time. So he's looking at it and staring at it, and he goes, the old double fours. And having been a fan of the movie, I just kind of burst out laughing, but I still rolled the made the play and kicked his ass that particular game.
Now, did you ever beat him when he had just needed one more turn to win, and did he ever go, missed it by that much?
I don't remember that, probably. He backgammon wasn't his best game. At the club, they played gin and bridge and backgammon, and I'm not sure he was good at any of them. But he enjoyed doing that, and he passed away several years ago, and I do miss him. I did like the guy. We just got a note saying that we can extend this show longer than we thought we are. So now we're now in the stall mode. Now, several weeks ago, there was a break-in at the 24/7 hold safety deposit boxes. And so we talked about it a little bit with Mr. Nassessian. Overall, what did you think about that 24/7 break-in? Do you think it was, now there was a lot of chatter on it on your website, including one lady who was a convicted tax felon, and she apparently is somebody who works there. And now, so I would think a company that would hire convicted felons as a place to hide your money and not tell anybody about it would be kind of a shady organization anyway. But I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I don't want to say anything bad about anybody. But yeah, I don't know what to say about it. It certainly would make me pause before using one of these places. It would seem to be a inviting target because you know they've got great stuff there, and then the stuff might be difficult to trace back to you.
And when you have your concealed weapon, maybe that's an inviting. But I think they're going out of business. That was rather bad press when this happened. Now, if safety deposit boxes, if you need them open 24 hours, I found casinos will hold. If you're a regular player at a casino, they will let you have a safety deposit box indefinitely. If you're a very occasional player, they won't. But if you're a big enough player who plays there on a regular basis, you can keep money in the boxes as long as you want. Now, poker players frequently do this. So back when I was playing every day at the MGM Grand 12 years ago and playing $500,000 a night through the machines day after day after day, I had a permanent safety deposit box and would put stuff in it every night.
Now, maybe I've never been a big enough player or asked the right people, but I have asked for safe deposit boxes before, and they flat out told me that they don't give them to locals.
Start with having a $100,000 line of credit and ask them again.
Yes, that probably changes the rules a little bit.
So, it does work, and banks can have it for any reason. But banks are open a relatively limited number of hours a day, and if you wanted it 11 o'clock Friday night, your bank's likely closed.
Uh-huh.
So, all right. So that's going to be it for this week. We want you to go out and hit lots of royal flushes. And next week we'll be back with Jeff Hall. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
You've been listening to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Michael Shackelford. Archived versions of past shows may be found on bobdancer.com and wizardofodds.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Michael Shackelford are both on Facebook and welcome your input or questions. Our sponsors are the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa, the Palms Casino Resort, the website videopoker.com, and the website wizardofodds.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge.